Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Today being Star Wars, brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
We also have with us today our great nerdy friend, Cammy, who shares our love for Star Wars. Welcome once again, Cammy.
I am happy to be here. Thanks.
Great. So today we are talking The Mandalorian, Episode 5, titled...
Le Gunslinger. Le Gunslinger.
No, what was it called?
Gunslinger. The Gunslinger.
It was called The Gunslinger.
Sorry, I was speaking Spanish there.
You were speaking something.
Is that what that was? Okay.
Anyway, so we are going to get right into spoilers here, people. So if you do not want spoilers for Episode 5, The Gunslinger of The Mandalorian Season 1.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
That. And also just pause the podcast, watch it, and then come back and hit play again. That's what I say. So let's just get right into it. So this episode opens with a space battle. Yes, please. Thank you.
Exactly.
I loved that about it. And, you know, it was not very long. It gets us to the point where his ship is a little bit damaged and he's got to make a stop for repairs. And the rest of the episode kind of deals with that. But I did love how the... it was interesting because the pilot that's coming after him was actually in an X-Wing, but clearly he was also like a bounty hunter or something.
Right.
So that kind of suggests there are like people who maybe were formerly in the Rebellion who now have gone their own separate way.
With some heisted vehicles.
Or maybe, you know, have become a little bit shady themselves if they weren't to begin with. So I thought that was really interesting
that
because
cool.
Clearly he was like an ex-Rebel pilot, right? It seemed like that. I think even from his like helmet and flight suit in the cockpit, he kind of looked like that. And I love how he said, you know, I can bring in warm or I can bring in cold.
Yeah.
And Mandalorian destroys him and goes,
yeah, that's
my line.
Line.
That was great.
And I love the space battles too. That's one of the things, I think it was, what was it, Revenge of the Sith? That whole big epic
It opened with an epic
in the movie. I love
space
the
battle.
Space battles, and I'd like to see more of them. Like even back in the late 90s, you know, those Star Wars games came out, like X-Wing and TIE Fighter and stuff, and just the space battles were so much fun to play, and it's so awesome to see them play out on screen, and I'm glad they're working that in, because it's not enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's an integral part of the Star Wars DNA, I think, and who doesn't like, you know, battles between spaceships? I just think that we're not likely to see much large-scale spaceship battle action in this show, specifically because it basically is a space western.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that there in westerns there weren't, like, big battles between, like, cowboys and Indians or between cowboys and other cowboys or the lawmen and the criminals or, what have you. But... you know, in the main saga of movies, that is literally an epic, and you have the biggest battles in those.
Right.
And this show is, you know, more focused down on the Mandalorian. Now, I think we probably will get bigger battles between, you know, multiple spaceships, just not to the scale that you see in, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to be armies versus armies.
Right, right.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if you have, you know, like a Seven Samurai or a Magnificent Seven type of situation later. Probably not in Season 1, I don't think. But because I think they have to build up to it where, like, eventually the Mandalorian, like, goes back to recruit, like, people that he's been in contact with previously, like Cara Dune. Like, maybe he goes back and fixes up the IG-11 from the first episode, you know, and wipes his memory.
Right.
And, you know, and like, other things. To where he's got sort of like a, you know, a band of, you know, dirty, rotten scoundrels or whoever he needs to do whatever they need to do. I think
like that.
That's probably coming at some point, just
That'd
probably
be very
not this
cool.
season.
You can kind of see that building.
Oh, totally. And by the way, this show has inspired me to go back and do a samurai movie and westerns movie marathon.
Ah.
So I will be posting about that on social media. On Facebook and Twitter, and I might even pick some especially good ones to like live tweet through the movie. That
yeah, we might need to work some of those into our hush hush undercover secret
well,
Patreon
I think,
project.
You know, if
coming up.
If Yeah, you know, something like that. But I think that it would be cool if you guys are able to watch some of these too, because I have this feeling that if we become a little more familiar with Westerns and samurai movies, and I've seen a lot of them, but just not in like the last 10 years, maybe.
Right.
Typically, our parents watch these, and we just watched them with our parents, yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, I watched a ton of Westerns with my dad when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But point being, I think that being more familiar with the genres, those two genres are going to be, will allow us to maybe, like, call some things ahead of time for The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm hoping, and maybe appreciate a little bit more and see, like, where they did, like, an homage to this or, like, a, you know, a shot from that or something. That, right. That kind of stuff is really interesting to me. So, nice. In any case, any other comments about this opening battle?
It was too short. But yeah, it's good.
Yeah, one thing before we get totally into the episode, I'd like to point out that this episode was not written and directed by Jon Favreau. It was actually written and directed by Dave Filoni, I believe his name is. And he's the one that created the animated shows Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance.
He is so I think steeped in Star Wars.
Yeah, he's a huge Star Wars geek, and I think that's kind of why there were so many throwbacks in this episode to stuff we're familiar with locations and characters. And
yeah, and that's that type of stuff we're definitely going to talk about in this episode. But yeah, Dave Filoni is great. I'm glad that they brought him on board. And, you know, Favreau's great, but, guy, you know, one man can't do everything.
Right.
Takes a village, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
To make a show and to raise a baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm. Especially if that village is under attack by orc dogs and then you run away.
Right. AKA Clatoonians. So then of course he goes to Tatooine for repairs.
Yay!
Tatooine.
And how awesome is that he goes to Tatooine? Like when he first, like, you know, you see it in the distance in space, I was like, is that a desert planet?
Yeah.
And he starts coming down and he communicates with Mos Eisley Tower and I was like,
it's Mos Eisley.
Oh, I got that nostalgic thrill. You know, I was like, oh my God, he's going to Tatooine.
Yeah, and it's so great because he does go not only to Tatooine, not only to Mos Eisley, not only to the Mos Eisley Cantina. You know, you see all these familiar locations.
It's really cool. Is it the same cantina, though? I mean, it seems reasonable.
Maybe it's a chain. Cantina.
Yeah, I read that it was the same cantina.
What did you say, Cammy?
I said it's like a chain. They're all over the planet.
It could be a chain. It could be a chain.
It's a McDonald's.
But I mean, like, when he's initially flying in, there's that wide shot of Mos Eisley, like, in the distance past the canyons or whatever. And that is, like, the exact shot from the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, where Luke and Obi-Wan and R2 come over the ridge and they're looking down on is, like, what a wretched hive.
Wretched hive, yeah.
That's like the exact shot. So that was like a huge thrill for me. And again, this is just further demonstration of how I think this show is tying into the main Star Wars, you know, movies in like the best way.
Yeah.
So we could talk a little bit about all the fan service, right? Which is basically to say that they showed us a bunch of stuff from the original movies on Tatooine, which I thought was really cool. And it did not feel like too much fan service or pandering to me. It really didn't. It just happened to be where he was.
I think we also get
to see a new side of it in the sense that, you know, this is 5 years after Return of the Jedi happens.
Right. Yeah. One of the things, like I mentioned, I did find a site that mentioned it was the Mos Eisley Cantina. And there's a couple things about it. I'd have to compare this to the first movie, A New Hope. But where he finds, what's his name, Toro Calican? Is that his name?
His name is Toro Calican.
Yeah, his name's Toro Calican. And rumored he's sitting in the booth with Han Solo and Greedo.
I actually wondered about that. The way his posture was with his leg up on the table like that and the way his elbow was gestured. I'm like, that seemed very, very familiar to me.
It does evoke a Han Solo type character. Well, right? He's a roguish... You know,
he reminded me of Han Solo too.
Yeah. Well,
just his mannerisms, like this could be a Han Solo as a 22-year-old. You know,
except for he is actually a bad guy, and Han Solo has a heart of gold.
That's true.
He's the rogue with the heart of gold, and Toro is the rogue with the heart of I want money.
Right.
Or I want, you know, to be legendary in the Bounty Hunters Guild.
And yeah. One more thing about the Mos Eisley Cantina. They've actually, there might have been some Me Too moments going on Tatooine.
Just stop. You know?
And no, I'm serious, because in the first movie, A New Hope, they don't serve droids here. We
that
don't
is true.
Serve your kind.
Yeah, I definitely
but
wanted
here,
to bring that up.
Now in the Mos Eisley Cantina, who's the bartender?
Droids.
Droids. A droid. It's kinder, gentler, less racist, Mos Eisley. So they're keeping with current events here on planet Earth.
I thought it was interesting, you know, because you're right. I mean, when Luke goes there, it's like they don't serve droids there. So is it a – I thought, well, is it a function of the fact that the Empire has fallen? No, because the Hutts are in control of Tatooine.
And they love
right?
droids.
This is the Outer Rim, so I guess it's like – Tatooine social progress or something. What do you think about this, Cammy?
So I was totally excited when it was, you see that it's going to be on Tatooine. And of course you have to wonder, where are they going to be connecting all the dots? And being back in the cantina was super cool. I did notice the droids right away and I was like, that's a little strange. I for some reason my brain was not firing on all cylinders when I saw that, because I forgot the part where they didn't actually let droids in the cantina. You know, in the other episodes, or not the episodes, but the other movies. Mm. So that was interesting. The whole thing, I love the way they're bringing the old, you know, pieces of Star Wars into this series. And, you know, I think it's all great. What did you call it? Fan service? I don't think I've even heard that word before.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he calls me the ultimate nerd, but really I just like adore the movies. I love the story. I don't know a ton about all the other stuff, but I love that they're incorporating the movie in here. It makes it feel very like unified in that way. But
Well, fan service, you know, I think there's a lot of people in the same position as you, Cammy. And basically fan service just kind of means like giving stuff that like the fans will get excited about, but that doesn't necessarily fit like in the rest of the story. But I thought that this did fit, and I didn't feel like it was too heavy-handed. And pandering is even like a further step, and I don't think it was that either. I just thought it was, you know, I thought it was cool to see Mos Eisley. And also, you know, there's one point where he's outside and he sees all those stormtrooper heads on pikes.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, the stormtrooper helmets, which I actually think the heads are probably in there.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get the sense that it was even remotely pandering at all. I thought, well, I mean, the whole thing is the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is part of that universe. So you're going to see similarities, or otherwise it's not a congruent story. So I think that it's great that they have these touches here and there. And the fact that it's, you know, we're all emotionally connected to it is even better. But I don't think that it's to be negated at all. I mean, I think that it's a great way to draw people in. I wouldn't consider it pandering.
I think so. And, you know, quick note, this show, The Mandalorian, is already more tied into the movie, you know, universe than any of the Marvel Netflix shows ever were.
Yeah.
Or even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., really, honestly. I'm not knocking that show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm just saying it never really was integrated with the movies.
Right.
Whereas The Mandalorian is obviously just gone head first into, you know, all the connections. So,
yeah. And one thing, too, I want to mention about the stormtroopers' heads on pikes. Obviously, this takes place after, you know, the whole Star Wars first two trilogies. And they don't really get into it as much in the first few episodes when you see the stormtroopers. But now, going to Mos Eisley, seeing their heads on pikes, it's almost like they're like the outcasts now. They used to just be marching around like we're in charge of everything and everyone ran in fear. But now they're probably like, you know, down into the underground trying to hide and stuff. So I think that'll be cool if they work more of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And my understanding of what happened with the Empire after the Battle of Yavin and Return of the Jedi is that, you know, it still did exist to some extent, but it was obviously defeated and it had to withdraw from the majority of its systems and withdrew. I think it still had territory like towards the core of the galaxy, if I'm not mistaken. Anybody listening out there who's, you know, a bigger Star Wars geek than me and in terms of knowing all this trivia, please, you know, let us know. But on the other hand, you probably had portions of the Empire's forces that either were like, well, Empire's gone, screw this, I'm out, you know, and took whatever toys they had with them and whatever, you know, troopers they had with them and went somewhere.
They became their own rebel force.
Well, you know, or became like warlords or whatever, or, you know, portions could have just been cut off from the rest of the empire and weren't able to get back safely and ended up, you know, with, say, their heads on pikes outside the cantina in Mos Eisley on Tatooine. Right. So that's just my
I'm surprised there wasn't like a big street vendor there just grilling them up. Because, you know, in cannibalism Star Wars now. Universe, someone will come along and be like, oh, stormtrooper heads. You know, they'd be like little those little eggs that they cook with the little dead birds in them.
Just,
you
know? Okay. That's, I can't. You know, I was going to have a snack, but now I just can't do it.
That's the foie gras of Mos Eisley.
Yeah. So, of course, he lands on Tatooine, and then the mechanic in his hangar is Amy Sedaris, played right. by Amy Sedaris, who I love. And the last thing I watched her in was The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and so it was it was a little bit it's a much different character that she's playing yeah. in this show. And you know, I was watching this Nerdist video about this episode, and they mentioned that she was doing her best Ripley impression. And she really does look like Ripley from yeah. Alien.
With the curly hair and everything. With
the yeah. hair and her like jumpsuit or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was great. But I like that. And it's interesting because, you know, the Mandalorian, you could forgive him for becoming cynical in the sense that, you know, people double cross him, you know, like Toro Calican, and these people are, you know, coming after him to try and like kill a baby and stuff. But on the other hand, you get people like this mechanic who, despite wanting to, you know, bilk him for every credit that he has, mm-hmm. like, she actually takes care of the baby and is concerned about it.
Yeah, and that scene was a little weird. It's kind of like pretty bad parenting from the Mandalorian.
And, you know, well, he's not a parent.
He's new to having a child. But he just leaves it. He just doesn't leave it there. It's like, it's not like he even left it in the car with the car locked. It's like, the car is just wide open, you know. The ship's just wide open. Well, no, actually,
it was locked. The baby opened the door.
Did he open it? I thought they were sitting there, and mm-hmm. it was just the ramp was down and everything. They were playing their card game, and then it made that sound. Because I just, I'm pretty sure.
Here, anyway, I'm just gonna look it up right now. I've got the episode right in front of me.
But it's just like you would think he would take a little more care, especially in Mos Eisley.
I'm not so much thrown back by the fact that he left a baby. I would be thrown back that he left a valuable asset. I mean, I know he right. sees it as more than an asset now. He knows there's something there and he's not, you know, not completely.
Oh,
like,
you're right. It was open. Yeah. You're right. It was open.
And it's like they just.
He knows it's an asset. I thought, is this person going to. He doesn't know who's going to come and take right. the baby. He's got like a fob on him, you know. Who knows?
He never watched Strangers with Candy. He doesn't know who Amy Sedaris
well, I think it was important that when he comes back, she says, you have a lot to learn about taking care of a child. You can't just right. leave it alone, you know, in your ship.
And one thing, it's funny, when he comes back to the ship, he's like walking through and he looks over and then he's going to grab his stuff and then he does the double take and realizes the bed is empty and little baby Yoda's not where little baby Yoda's supposed to be. So he goes out and hollers at, I don't know what her character name is. Mechanic. Amy Sedaris' character. Yeah, the mechanic. And she's like nodding off, holding baby Yoda. Yeah. And she like jolts awake. And you just see that little baby head just, and just getting whiplashed around. I'm like, oh my God, that's so bad to do to a baby. Yeah. And it's also so bad to do to a 50-year-old, which this is both things at once. You know, so it's like, yeah. Wow, that's... Baby
well, he does
careful.
Like almost panic when he sees that the baby is gone, right?
Yeah. And
so that to me shows that he's, you know, his affection is growing a little bit for this baby. He's growing as a person. It makes me wonder, actually, if the next episode will be like the Mandalorian search for a nanny, you know, kind of a thing. It's like I could see him hiring a babysitter. And
I hope it's
like,
a hut. I hope it's a hut.
Right. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to find like somebody to watch it on yeah. his next stop or like, you know, strap it to his back or that. Wouldn't that be awesome to strap it to his back? It'd be this interesting inversion of like when Luke is training with Yoda yeah. on, you know,
that'd be great.
But I think they do such a good job of making the baby Yoda act like a real baby, you know.
Well, they have the best voice actor too. It's you might not realize this. It's actually Vin Diesel who played Groot. He what? Also
no,
does
it's not.
Baby no, it's Yoda. Not.
Oh my gosh,
that's a lie, everyone. That is a dirty lie.
But
I'm just letting our listeners know that you're a troll.
If it wasn't, that would. I mean, he's definitely to the point where he could show his range. Vin Diesel is.
Well, you know, I happen to have a 6-month-old baby right now, and it's kind of equivalent, except that, you know, Baby Yoda can walk.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, like when she's holding it there and he like is like first comes back and stuff and he's about to leave again and go out the door to get on the speeder or whatever with Toro. Like there's a moment when the baby just kind of like turns its head up to him and goes, ah, and that's like exactly what babies do.
Right.
It's just little stuff like that. You know, I really notice it now because I'm a parent, but I just feel like that. God, they got it right on with this Baby Yoda. Do you concur, Cammy?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I think that it's a, you know, I worry, of course, as a female, I'm like, it's adorable, you know, but I think that, I think it's genderless. The adoration we all have for this tiny
yes,
infant
yes.
Yoda.
I was
going to
say, I feel that it's adorable.
Yeah, it's completely adorable. And they have the mannerisms, the vocalizations of a baby all the time. Sometimes you try to like make it work in your human, like in a human baby, like, okay, it makes baby sounds, but it walks and it also can use the Force. So
yeah,
it's this weird fusion between
a toddler and a baby.
It eats frogs whole. Is it not chewing things? I don't.
Yeah. Although I'm convinced that, you know, a 6-month-old would eat a frog hole if it could actually
right.
manage
totally
to stuff
would.
It into its mouth. I'm convinced.
Yeah. No, I think they have that spot on. I'm really intrigued to learn more about like the, you know, I'm starting to get a little bit antsy that it's the episode 5, what there's only 8 in the first, you know, season. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wanted to see some more stuff and I'm afraid they're not going to be able to smush in everything I want. I'm starting to get like nervous, you know, as the time passes. And I'm like, was episode 5 really the best way you could spend your time? We only have 3 episodes left.
Well, they're definitely giving us a season 2. I mean, that's confirmed. Yeah. They're already working on season 2. Thank goodness.
And I on what Cammy just said, I have not been nervous at all about that because I didn't even think about that until she just now mentioned it. So now I'm getting a little nervous too.
I'm for sure nervous. Yeah. I mean, although
what are the things that you'd want to see that you're afraid they might not have time for? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, you know, I've loved every single episode. I've loved them all. And I don't love this one as much as I love the other one, but they're all good. Nice. They're all good. So even a bad Mandalorian episode is a good Mandalorian episode. I think that that the pieces that they talk about, all these little, like, you know, notes of here and there and like the little peaks of stuff is all good, and cohesively it's good, but I didn't get all what it meant. And I just want to see where this Baby Yoda goes, like what's the, you know, I just want to see more, like, you know, plot development. Like I really wanted to see a little bit more. Sometimes when the story stalls a little bit, there's a lot of world building happening and that engages me so heavily that I forget that, oh wait, what's going on with the Baby Yoda? But this time I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? Because now I'm feeling the pressure of only, you know, we're talking like only 90 minutes left in the whole story of this season. And I really hope to see something happen, some sort of, I don't know, anything happen besides just, so right
you're
now
saying,
he's just.
You're saying you want some plot movement on the overarching, like, Baby Yoda client plot stuff.
Something.
Right?
I would like to see Baby Yoda do something, or like to.
Like.
Yeah, I know.
Like
it's hard
ride
for me
in a
to
rodeo,
articulate.
Or like, what do you. Like, what do you mean do something? Like, other than like sleep and like yawn and make baby sounds?
Well, no, I'd like to see the development of, like, not necessarily the baby itself, but like, you know, its origins, you know.
Right.
I hate to open this box of talking about the Force,
you
or, you know,
you
how the Force is connected to him in such an early age in his life. And, you know, I would love to, like, just a little more backstory or a little more
is
forward story.
Is he a
story.
Clone? Is he not a clone?
It's a good question. And if I had to guess, and I guess I'm going to,
but I
would guess that we will get a little bit of that before the end of the season. But they can't give
us. Before the cliffhanger.
Well, they can't give us too much just in the first 8 episodes, honestly. I mean, they're going to draw it out.
I get it. But, you mean, they could do more. I mean, it's such a, there's so much depth and breadth inside of the possibilities of the Force and all the possible things they could go with, they could give us maybe a little bit more. I mean, I don't know. Everything's brilliant. Like I said, even a bad one's a great one. So, I mean, I loved it. I was very engaged through the whole, you know, episode. I especially like the last part, which I know we'll talk about, but everything's good. So I would not even give this a bad rating. I just, you know, I'm wanting more because I'm feeling the timeline ticking.
Yeah.
It's your astrological, well, that wouldn't be astrological.
I don't have a lot to talk about in terms of the bounty that they do where they get Fennec Shand. I mean, I thought it was a really cool action sequence where they're like coming on the speeders at night and they're throwing up the flares, and like he goes around and then he's fighting Ming-Na and she, you know, thoroughly whoops his ass.
Why are the girls more powerful in the Star Wars universe? But I think, is every girl capable to, like, I mean, like the Mandalorian can handle like 24 stormtroopers, but a girl's gonna like kick his butt every single time? Is this what happens?
Well, we're talking about, you know, how did he describe her? She's like one of the most elite mercenaries.
He did
like,
say
in
that.
The galaxy.
He was for the Hutt, right?
So, you know, this.
But that's a good point she brings up too, because the stormtroopers are in the military. They do have rigorous training. That's their life. That's what they do. And then along comes a mercenary or a bounty hunter who just whoops them all up. Like, well, who are these people?
So
where do they get their training?
Let's recap like all of Star Wars. And what are all the jokes about the stormtroopers not being able to shoot? You make a good point, if you dig a layer deeper, like these are soldiers, so they are basically career soldiers. They're not like specialists, like mercenaries who are obsessive about their craft, and you know, that's the way that I think about it.
So they're basically the guys on the corner spinning the signs. Someone comes along
and puts
a stormtrooper
They're beat
hat
cops,
on
basically. No offense to beat cops. I'm just saying that, like, they do their job. They're not elite. You know, they're not elite, like, obsessive about, like, learning new ways to kill somebody every week.
So
you know
they're
what
more
I'm
Navy and less Marines.
Come on now. I've got respect for all the folks in our armed forces, you know.
As do I. I'm just a silly goose.
Let's move on from there.
Hey guys, look, Star Wars.
But basically, like, yeah, I mean, that was a really cool action scene and stuff. And then I thought the scene between Toro and Fennec, you know, the young bounty hunter and Ming-Na's character, where she like convinces him, like, that guy's obviously not very smart.
Right.
Yeah. He's a little green.
He's a little green. He's a little greedy. Maybe a lot greedy.
Yeah.
His little twist at the end, though, took me by surprise. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, so we'll get to the end. But, like, is there anything else you wanted to say about the whole bounty situation before he gets back to take off at the end?
I don't understand why they couldn't. I mean, they had the one speeder, and he's just like, well, I don't want you to just leave me here and take my only ride out of here. But the whole point was he was going to stay and watch over Fennec anyway, so why couldn't Mandalorian have taken the bike to go find the thing and be back right away?
Because he didn't trust him to do that.
Yeah, well, that's when you smacked the little...
Yeah, I thought that there was maybe it made you pause, but I was too engaged in the story to really like think that pull out. I was like,
well, look, the younger bounty hunter guy was did not trust the Mandalorian at all. That's why he smashed the tracking fob in the beginning, and then that's why he said, "Well, no, I don't agree. I'm not going to just leave you here with her so that you can take her and get the bounty yourself and leave me in the middle of the desert with just a freaking do back to get me home." So that's all. But
I
so then
do back.
So we can talk about this thing at the end that you brought up, Jess, which is at the very, very end. It's just that brief scene of like some shadowy figure walking up to the body of Fennec Shand, Ming-Na's character. And he seems to be the implication is that he's tracking the Mandalorian, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And so what are your thoughts about this stuff, guys? Why don't we go with Cammie and then Jess?
Yeah, I was like, the Western theme, you just can't escape. Because it sounded like he was wearing spurs or something. He's approaching in the night and the shade. And you're immediately like looking for any type of insignia Like, you're like, is there buttons or belts or something on him that would show? And it doesn't show anything.
I don't even think you see anything above the knee.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, you know, I was looking for like a buckle or a I don't know. I was looking for some sort of like stamp or leather stamp on his. I just couldn't find anything.
Space spurs.
Something. I needed to know who this guy was, why he was there. And so definitely, I think it was. You know, Jess, who said that it's a this is the gunslinger. I'm really interested to see who this person is and why they are. Are they tracking the Mandalorian or the Baby Yoda or what?
It's interesting because they could be tracking the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. They could be tracking the Baby Yoda, but also for different reasons. Like maybe, you know, this is somebody who has a connection, a positive connection to the Baby Yoda. An advocate, somebody who's trying to track him down and defend him, or it could be somebody with more malicious intent. What are your thoughts, Jess?
As far as the whole tracking thing, why would, if he was tracking Mandalorian, which I don't think anyone's tracking the Mandalorian, they're tracking the Baby Yoda. Because that's what's all their fobs.
Well, but they know that the Mandalorian has the Baby Yoda.
Well, right, but that's what I'm saying. It's like the fob doesn't point towards the Mandalorian; it points towards Baby Yoda. So
right, but since we know so little about this figure, what I'm saying is that this person could be tracking either of them.
Right, but if he was tracking either of them, why would he be led into the desert across the Dune Sea to this ridge where neither of them are?
Well, it's a good question.
It's almost
that's...
he's not following.
Well, what do you think he's doing?
He's not got a tracking fob. Maybe I don't know. Maybe, like you guys said, maybe it is an advocate. Maybe it's a local to Tatooine
you're saying it's something totally unrelated to the rest of the show. That makes sense.
Well, not totally unrelated. It's just a character. It's like I don't think it's going to be another of the bounty hunters. It's just after them. Because I think, obviously, the whole show is going to be him being hunted by bounty hunters. I really don't want the ultimate villain for the first season to be a bounty hunter. I want it to be something deeper and, you know, more Star Warsy, something that's gonna make us go what?
Yeah,
you know, not just like, oh, it's another really strong bounty hunter.
Well, you on know? That note, I do have some thoughts. Okay, so I was looking at a bunch of articles and things online to kind of see what other people thought, and one of the theories that I saw this on Nerdist and a couple other places, and it's the one that seems the most likely, although I'm not totally convinced that this is going to be what it is, but here we go. So it could be, wait for it.
Ready.
Boba Fett.
Ugh, I hope not.
It could potentially be Boba Fett. He was last seen on Tatooine in the belly of the Sarlacc.
He was last seen in the Sarlacc.
Inside of Tatooine. That's where he was last seen.
Yeah.
Right. He is a bounty hunter, so he would have the guild connection, and he'd probably want the big payout to get this Mandalorian and the baby. And also, you mentioned, Cammy, that jingling sound when he walked.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Jingo Jango?
If you look at specifically the scene in The Empire Strikes Back where... Lando brings them into that dinner with Darth Vader, you'll notice that when Boba Fett like steps out from behind, you know, wherever he was hiding, he makes that same jingling sound.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah.
I debate. No, please.
You love Boba Fett.
I'm not saying that's the only character in the galaxy that jingles when he walks, but it's at least possible. So what are your thoughts on – what are you guys' thoughts on this?
All right, I take it back. Make it another bounty hunter. I don't want it to be Boba Fett. I mean, Boba Fett's already been kind of the star and the focus and has had, you know, literally a whole army based off of his body. You know, we've seen enough of Boba Fett. I want someone new. I don't want Boba Fett anymore. Because, she said, you love Boba Fett. I do love Boba Fett. I did love Boba Fett. And I felt some loss when he got swallowed by the Sarlacc and then it burped.
I see.
You know, but...
It did burp.
But I think that was the end of his cycle. And now I love the Mandalorian more than I love Boba Fett. So... I don't need an old girlfriend back in the story, you know?
I see.
I got my new love.
You're bitter.
Now.
You've moved on. You've moved
love.
On.
I've moved on. I've
moved
on.
I think it's healthy. Gotcha. I think it's healthier that you've moved on. Mandalorian's better. Better for you.
I got my closure.
So likely Boba Fett, because I say Boba Fett sometimes as a joke, so sorry. But maybe. So if it's Boba Fett, is this the idea that he was also tracking this, the Hutt's mercenary? I'm trying to think of the name, and I didn't catch it.
I think, well, it's possible that he had that bounty too, but I think that,
like what brought him there was she hunting that person, the cloaked person that we're speculating might be.
What makes the most sense to me is that if this is indeed Boba Fett, then he is tracking the Mandalorian, A, because he has the guild bounty for the baby Yoda, and B, because, you know, he probably wants to cannibalize and scavenge the Mandalorian's equipment and armor as Beskar armor.
Well, yeah, that would be the end of the Mandalorian, sort of, then, wouldn't it? Because, I mean, Boba Fett is, speculated to be wearing stolen Mandalorian armor. It's not obviously his.
He is, and I don't know whether it's Beskar or something else that Boba Fett wears. Mm-hmm. But if it's not Beskar, or even if it is, really, I mean, it's like, why would he not want the Mandalorian's stuff?
Of course.
I mean, that's just the kind of guy that Boba Fett is, apparently.
Well, if it is Boba Fett, we're going to see one of two things. One, it's going to be a team-up. It's going to be like Miami Vice.
And they're gonna
pew, pew, pew. Or we're going to get to see Boba Fett die yet again at the hands of the Mandalorian this time.
I don't know. Maybe he'll just get, like, you know, his ship disabled in space, or he'll be, you know, he'll have to retreat or something. I would be surprised if they just outright killed Boba Fett, like, in the first couple episodes that we see him. I'd be really surprised, because could you imagine the fan reaction?
People would hate it. And he's gone.
And he's dead.
Yeah.
Now, granted, we've already gotten way more of this Mandalorian than we ever got of Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that Boba Fett became, like, this, like, interesting, like, cherished figure in Star Wars lore somehow, yeah. Even though he made, like, a couple cameos, and that's all he did.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. But here's the other thing that I'm wondering about, because if he's on Tatooine, then the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, they're in the Outer Rim, way on the edge of the galaxy, and, you know, I've been rewatching all of the Star Wars movies leading up to The Rise of Skywalker coming out in a couple weeks.
Woo-hoo!
Here. And I'm on the Clone Wars, right, or Attack of the Clones right now, and they say, specifically in that movie, they say that Kamino is beyond the Outer Rim, 12 parsecs outside the Rishi Mace. So what I'm saying is, he's actually kind of close to Kamino at this point. And given Dr. Pershing and the client's connection to Kamino with mm-hmm. the baby Yoda, mm-hmm. is it going to turn into a situation where he's going to need to go there at some point?
Ah.
And that I'm really wondering about. I don't know. It's, you know, obviously it's hard to say. But I also wouldn't be surprised if the cliffhanger we get at the end of the season, I'm just going to call it right now, sees the baby Yoda taken away from the Mandalorian and or killed. I don't want to see that. I'm going to say it's less likely that the baby's actually going to be killed, but I think that it might turn into a situation where, you know, the baby is taken from him.
I don't think they're going to do the baby Yoda murder as the end of the season cliffhanger. I don't think they're going to kill it, because that's totally un-Star Wars like to kill a baby, even though it's an old baby.
Except for the scene where Anakin literally murders all the children.
All the babies.
Yeah, but they don't Except show for that. It. They don't show it. But anyway, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. I think this mysterious cloaked figure that showed up at the end of this episode is going to be kind of the main focal point, the anti-hero or antagonist for the rest of the season, and he's going to have, or she's going to have, a big part to play in the cliffhanger at the end of the season. And you mentioned real quick before we were potting, you mentioned that the date of the last episode, the season finale, is moved up.
Yeah, so they're doing a tie-in to Rise of Skywalker. And of course, as anybody who's watching this show knows, the new episodes are coming out on Friday. But the one that was originally scheduled for the 20th, they moved back to Wednesday the 18th is when
Which
that's going to come
11
out.
11 days from now.
Right, because
it has... Is the end of
has...
the season?
Or what's no? that?
That's not the end of
no,
the season.
No, that's the episode, penultimate right? episode, so the second okay. to last episode.
Gotcha.
But what they're doing is they're having an exclusive sneak peek of The Rise of Skywalker. And a lot of people have speculated. I have not found any actual, like, firsthand real information that says this is the case. It seems to be a leap in logic that people are making. So based on this, it seems like some people are saying, the show is going to tie directly into the movie. And I'm thinking, I don't know about that.
What's the timeline on the
movie? Well, this is the other really interesting thing, okay? Because, okay, so think about it this way for a second. So Rey is born.
Yeah, I know the timelines have got to be playing into this a little bit, because how old is Luke Skywalker at this point in The Mandalorian 2?
Well, this is 5 years after Return of the Jedi, so what was he in Return of the Jedi, like 28 or something? Yeah. But so he's probably off like training his, you know, first batch of new Jedis before it all goes south or something like that. But so Rey was born about 10 years after the Return of the Jedi, and therefore about 5 years after this first season of the
Mandalorian. Yeah, so she's not even born yet, so we're another 20 years in the future.
So if you consider, this goes back to what I was saying about Baby Yoda, I think in our last Mandalorian episode, in his when we talked about the cloning patch on his arm from Kamino and all that.
Right.
So if you think about it, that gives, from the point we're at in The Mandalorian now, this client and Dr. Pershing and Kamino some time to perfect this cloning technology, to figure out how to create clones with that are force sensitive, because we talked about how obviously the Emperor is in the new Star Wars movie because his voice has been in like every trailer, right? And it's so in the, what's it called, the Legends, the old the books and things that aren't necessarily canon now.
Right.
So the Emperor was known to use clones to extend his life. Like, he would create a clone and put his, like, life force or whatever into it. But then, like, the clones didn't last very long, and it was really hard to actually create clones that were force sensitive. So if this is, like we were saying before, what the client is working on for the Emperor, then, you know, with the information they already have from the Yoda baby, or if they get it back by the end of this season or whatever happens, like, that could actually connect to the new trilogy of Star Wars movies. But right. that's not the same as, like, you know, the Mandalorian appearing in Rise of Skywalker and, like, shooting somebody. You know what I mean? That's not as direct of a tie-in. That's more of a below the surface kind of a tie-in. But I think that would be super cool.
That would be cool. It would be neat to see what the connections might
be. But I mean, I'm definitely going to watch that sneak peek. I don't think that means that it's going to have a direct tie-in like that. That's just what I think it means.
Maybe in The Mandalorian we'll get to meet Rey's parents 5 years prior to her birth.
See, I think, and this is potential spoiler for Rise of Skywalker, I think Rey is probably a clone, one of the clones that Palpatine worked on, and that's why she's A, so incredibly force sensitive, and B, she already had a number of abilities because she probably had some training when she was small before her quote-unquote parents dropped her off on Jakku. And who knows who those people really were, but that would also explain when she goes down into that dark side place and sees at that, like, ice wall her, like, infinite reflections.
Right.
That would explain the fact that A, seemed to indicate that her parents were nobody. Literally, they were nobody.
Yeah.
Right? And also, her parents
were literally her. Because
it would explain those infinite reflections of her. Like, there are so many rays, right? Because if you see in that, you know, maybe we should do like a Rise of Skywalker theories cast or something.
Well, we really should, and we're kind of running out of time here as far as...
Yeah, you're right. So, but I think I've really gone through the major parts of this episode and talked about it. So let's just end on a couple things. So A, what was the part of the episode that... was most impactful for you? How did it make you feel? And then closing thoughts. So why don't we go with Jess and then Cammie, and then I'll do mine.
Most impactful scene. I don't know. Like I said, like we talked about, all of the callbacks and the fan service that was kind of just from the very beginning with the star battle, the sky starship mm-hmm. battle. From there, and then
Star
Tatooine,
War, one might
the
even
Star
say.
War, one might call it a star skirmish. No, and just Tatooine, Mos Eisley, the Cantina, and even the speeders. I thought watching them go across the Dune Sea, that was just a cool scene. I was like, that would be so much fun, you know. I just really liked all the callbacks because it brings you back to a familiar place, and that is a place of happiness from my childhood that I loved. And overall, I just really liked the episode. The story kind of led you in a couple different directions, but ended up not going real far. I was expecting more from Toro. I expected him. He was played by Shia LaBeouf, right? Anyway, he got killed, and I didn't see that coming so fast. I thought they were building him up to be like a little sidekick, but turns out I was wrong. But yeah, I just thought the whole episode was a lot of fun. Not really any single scene really stood out to me that I thought was awesome, but cool. Overall I enjoyed it.
Okay, Cammy?
I think Jesse's right there. I think that there's nothing really that stands out necessarily aside from you get the sentimental throwbacks here and there. What's that?
I said haters gonna hate. I'm just playing.
Yeah, generally speaking, I thought it was a good episode. I cannot actually articulate one particular scene that I thought was really standing out to me, except for the last few moments there where we saw the black boots. That was, you know, exciting to me. I think the best part of this episode, if anything, is the questions that it plants. So there's lots of questions related to, like, why was she in the desert? I mean, that's where she was. Why was she there in the middle of the desert? Was she expecting them? You know, who was she working for? Who was that third person? What does he mean? There was a lot of questions, and I think that's the best part. And that's what we love about Star Wars so much. There's so much room for speculation and questions and curiosities, and The Mandalorian delivers. Again, it was really, really good. So I'm really excited about episode 6, 7, 8, please.
Yes. Well, you know, for me, you know, come to think of it, I'm not sure what the most impactful moment was for me. I think that the Mandalorian's reaction to seeing the baby gone from his little, like, sleeping pad.
Right.
I don't know if that was, like, the most exciting moment, but that seemed to me, like, the biggest. Yeah. It was kind of like his biggest character moment in that episode. I guess, like, the two biggest character moments for him were maybe when he agreed to do the job with Toro, and then when he had that moment, because like you said, Jesse, like, did this double take, and then he was like, "Hey!" Like, he was almost panicking there.
Yeah, like, he ran out and was like, "Bah!"
Yeah,
and then little baby Yoda got shaken.
It's always cool to see, like, you know, the big, like, tough guy get all soft and, like, you mm-hmm. know, care about babies and things. something about that is just interesting to watch in movies with characters. I think it's because it represents some kind of, like, unexpected, like, character growth or something. I'm not looking too far into it right now. But, I mean, my final thoughts on this episode.
Oh, one thing real quick before you get into that. This is the first episode, I believe, where, well, he might, maybe in the last episode he didn't, but it's like that one episode we talked about, all he did was, you know, turn on people and, you know, do the double switch. And this is, like, the first episode he hasn't actually betrayed anybody.
It is?
I think maybe it's the last one he didn't either.
No, he betrayed the client in, what is it, the third episode?
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I don't think he's betrayed anybody. Or, well, I guess he betrayed the baby Yoda in the third episode, too.
Yeah.
He betrayed one and then the other, but
yeah, I think he redeemed himself.
But, I mean, final thoughts, yeah, I think it was great. This episode was great to see Tatooine, and to see Tatooine post Empire. Like, I'm very interested in the Star Wars lore, and it's just a thrill to see what the galaxy is like in between, you know, after Return of the Jedi, but before The Force Awakens. That's always been kind of like a period of time that's been kind of unexplored cinematically, and I really appreciate that. I know that there was some, what's the show, Star Wars Resistance, that animated show that has, like, two seasons. That took place, like, I think, just before The Force Awakens, at least the first season. But, I mean, generally speaking, We haven't got a lot in that time period, and it was really cool to see. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, and you know, episode 6, The Nanny. I think that'll be fun to watch. I don't know that. I mean, I'm sure that's not what it's called. I know they actually have released the titles of the upcoming episodes and synopses for them, but I'm not going to get into that right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if.
So I just want to thank everybody again for listening to this episode of Mecha Dragon. And I want to thank Cammy for coming on the show with us again today. Thanks again, Cammy.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so Jess, do you want to give everybody our social media details?
Sure do. Poindexters, thank you for listening again to this episode. And we'd like to hear from you who you think would be a fitting nanny race for the upcoming episode, The Nanny. Let us know. You can find us at mechadragon.net, where you can also find our podcast, which is on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox,
etc.
Everywhere
et
you can find... Yeah, etc., etc. We're all over the place. We're coming to dominate the world soon. And again, give us a thumbs up. Give us a like. 5 stars. Give us reviews on all the platforms. If you're on Facebook, you can find us under Mecha Dragon. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Mecha Dragon Show. Email us at mechadragonshow@gmail.com. Questions, comments, corrections, topics. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
Thanks, everybody. Signing out.
Bye.
Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod from incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.